The committee will come to order. We have people that need to disperse, so we need to get started here promptly. Ms. Burke, will you please take the roll?
Today is Thursday, March 30th, 2023. Vice Chair Friedel.
Here.
Wilson.
Here.
Senator Beard.
Here.
Senator Denwell.
Here.
Senator Glimm.
Here.
Senator Gross.
Senator Gross is excused.
Senator Kelker.
Senator Kelker is excused.
Senator Mandeville.
Here.
Senator Treves.
Here.
Senator Escher.
Yes, here.
Senator Vance.
Here.
Here.
Thank you.
All right. We have a quorum. We can conduct business. Members of the public, would you please sign up on the clipboard that's outside the door? And when you approach the microphone, please say and spell your last name for the record. Silence your cell phones. We have five bills to do today, committee, so we'll want to keep our questions concise and stay on task. And our first bill that we'll be hearing, the bill orders are up on the board here, but the first one will be House Bill 47. Is he in the room? He's not in the room. 470, House Bill 470 was the plan. Hello.
Chair, Representative Fitzgerald will be here after roll and everything, so he may be a few.
Okay.
So if you want to put him back one.
Okay. Are you ready to present? Awesome. All right. Well, we will change. We will adjust the order of go, and we will begin the hearing on House Bill 491 with Representative Gunderson. Thank you for being here, Representative Gunderson. Take a moment and get yourself organized, and I'll rearrange the board. Are we ready?
We are ready.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Representative Gunderson, please proceed on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's kind of interesting being in front of Senate Transportation. Haven't done this one before. But I'm bringing you HB 491, and it's an act revising Highway Patrol officer laws, creating a recognition of meritorious service on retirement and providing an immediate effective date. And this one's really close to home. We just had an officer that was severely injured, and we really don't know what the end outcome is going to be. And when I brought this to the House, there was an amendment brought to it, and if you look at page 1, line 15, it's section 1, sub 2, taken medical retirement resulting from an in-the-line-of-duty injury sustained while providing meritorious service. And that addition to the bill, I think, capped it for me as being the ultimate bill. So reverting back, the Highway Patrol Chief may award to a Highway Patrol officer on retirement that Highway Patrol officer's badge, duty weapon, and handcuffs, providing that a committee of three of the Highway Patrol's officers' peers certifies to the Highway Patrol Chief that the retiring Highway Patrol officer has, sub one, served meritoriously for a minimum of 20 years, and we edited that. That was my mistake. I got 15 instead of 20. And must be so honored, or, and then the amendment we added for the in the line of duty injury sustained while providing meritorious service. A very simple bill. I don't think it needs a lot of verbiage. And again, it's an honor to bring that to your committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gunderson. Do we have proponents on the bill?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Colonel Steve Lavin. It's spelled L-A-V-I-N, and I'm the Chief Administrator of the Montana Highway Patrol. We rise as a proponent of this bill. The intent on this is great. I love it, and I appreciate the sponsor for bringing it. Just to give some perspective, we do allow currently the troopers to purchase these items at the end of their career if they have 20 years of service on. However, this bill makes it so that I may give these to the troops if the committee decides so. But it is permissive, I see. The one thing I wished I could have talked to the sponsor just before the hearing, but just a few little things on this is that duty weapon, they carry three different duty weapons. They carry a rifle, shotgun, and pistol. And the usual thing, what I would like to see is the pistol, but maybe since it's permissive, it says may in the bill, maybe that gives me the option to pick that, because the pistol is quite a bit cheaper on that regard. They're about $500, the rifle's about $8, and the shotgun's about $1,000. And then the badge adds up to $375, so they're the cost. So we have a turnover every year, approximately 20 people, and most of those have 20 years and served meritoriously. And so I would respectfully ask if there's any chance of any kind of funding for this. Our budgets are tight. I approximate about $20,000 a year that I'll need to put out for this, because we have to buy these items to replace them for the next trooper that comes around. But I really appreciate the sponsor bringing this, and I'll be stand for questions here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Colonel Lavin. Further proponents.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jesse Luther, last name is L-U-T-H-E-R, appearing today on behalf of the Association of Montana Troopers. We also rise in support of this bill. We think it is a good bill. When our guys do retire, they like to take a little bit of the job with them as a reminder. And something commemorative. We also really like the amendment that Representative Gunderson referred to that allows the medically retired individuals to be able to take advantage of this as well. So we appreciate the bill, thank the sponsor, and urge you to support it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Luther. Further proponents? Further proponents? Any proponents online, Ms. Brommel?
None online, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no further proponents, are there opponents in the room? Opponents for House Bill 491. Seeing none, are there any online, Ms. Brammel?
No opponents online, Madam Chair.
Any informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, any informational witnesses online, Ms. Brammel?
None online, Madam Chair.
All right. Questions from the committee? Senator Dunwell.
Madam Chair, I do have a question, and I think it's for Mr. Carroll about the funding and the time frame. And you actually, Madam Chair, might be able to answer my question. But the first proponent, Administrators Colonel Steve Lavin, mentioned he would appreciate some funding for this because of the financial cost of these items, and I'm wondering if we need to put an appropriation on this and get it over. Oh, wait a minute. I am sorry. This is a House bill. It's already been moved over, right? So if we put it, so what would be the process? Excuse me. I will get my thoughts together. What will be the process of putting funding on this, Mr. Carroll?
Madam Chair and Senator, it would be a little bit complicated to get an appropriation onto this because appropriations have to originate in the House. And so if you wanted to, you could amend the bill and then ask your colleagues in the House not to accede to the amendments and then to form a free conference committee, which could, could a free conference committee start an appropriation? I don't know if it's possible to get an appropriation onto this bill at this time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the question. It's always an interesting opportunity to learn as we go. Senator Usher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for Colonel Lavin.
Madam Chair, Senator Usher.
Madam Chair, Colonel, it says provide that a committee of three, what is that committee? Is that already a standing committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Usher, no, I think the intent would be like they do in Idaho. The colonel will put together a committee of three senior staffers that would take a look at it. It's pretty basic and simple. The vast majority retire with meritorious service. There are, a few that go out in different ways. But I think that would be a fairly simple process. Does that address your question?
Follow up?
I guess my comment on that is you said senior staffers, and that's not peer. But line of duty death was not considered in this bill?
Yep. Madam Chair, Senator Usher, I didn't see it in there, but yeah, I'd be more than happy to do that. I think that is something that we regularly would do anyway, but to codify it would be great. If you can adjust. And speaking of my earlier suggestion, is that I certainly don't want to hold up this bill or anything like that. I think we could probably absorb it, at least for the first couple of years until the next session. Maybe we could add a little bit of funding in the next session, if that helps.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Vice Chair Friedel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would be for Mr. Lavin, or
Colonel Lavin.
Colonel.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Colonel, has there been maybe conversations with some of the associations that support the troopers having some sort of funding mechanism, say like a, party or fundraiser, things like that maybe offset the costs?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Friedel, that's what we currently do. The trooper supervisor will usually put together a little fundraiser and ask for funding from the other troopers, and that usually funds most of these items, depending on how much funding they get from the other troopers across the state.
Follow-up question, Madam
Chair.
Follow-up.
Continue to do that, sir.
No problem. Madam Chair, Colonel, now, when you said 20 officers roughly, is that 20 officers statewide or is that a jurisdictional 20?
Madam Chair, Senator, it's statewide. So we see about a turnover, approximately about 20 a year.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Colonel.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee?
Senator Olson got her hand up at one point.
Senator Olson, did you have your hand up and have a question?
No, Madam Chair. I realize that the bill... I was just going to ask Mr. Carroll why there wasn't a fiscal note if there's a need for money, but I can see from the bill that it's not apparent that there's a need for money from the bill. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Colonel Lavin, please.
Madam Chair, Senator Vance.
Colonel Lavin, could you please kind of restate... We were talking about a retirement of approximately 20 a year. Now, is that full retirement or is that would all 20 be qualified for this?
Madam Chair, Senator Vance, the majority of them, I'd say most of them, okay, would be full retirement. Some will find other jobs. Some will go out in not the best way. And right. Yes, I'd say the vast majority, probably 90, 95% of them.
Thank you.
I have a question for you, Colonel. What's the average life expectancy of a firearm, of a handgun, say, as opposed to a rifle or a shotgun that gets used less? Well, I guess maybe they all get used less, but...
Madam Chair, we do utilize them quite often with, you know, with practice and stuff like that. But it really varies on the, you know, the rifles will last a long time. The pistols, they do have a service life. And I don't want to say an exact quote, but I think it's approximately 15 years is the time period where our previous pistols start breaking down. And so we just updated our pistols last year.
Okay. So a follow-up on that then. So when a trooper joins the force, he's given a weapon, and he may have how many years of service before he's eligible for retirement?
Madam Chair, the current eligibility is 20 years minimum to have a full retirement. And so, you know, you might change out your pistol one time in your career.
And that address. Yeah, that does. That helps me understand what's done with the retired pistols.
Madam Chair, it's quite a process. So what we do is we allow the troopers who currently carry the pistols, if we're changing them over, or the rifles or shotguns, to purchase the old ones at a rate that's consistent with what a used pistol would go for. So, and most of the troopers do take advantage of it. I know I've purchased every weapon I've ever had, and I like this bill. So, hopefully it'll apply to me, and I'll be able to have these three additional.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Any further questions from the committee? All right.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Senator Friedel.
Madam Chair, for the Colonel, you piqued my brain.
Madam Chair, Colonel,
it maybe instead of selling them at a discount, might not be a bad idea to maybe hold on to that service weapon, and then when they do retire, we can utilize that service weapon as the one that they part company with at a discount.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's a great idea. I hadn't thought of that, but that's something that we could probably include in our policy.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
That is a good idea. All right. Seeing no further questions, Representative Gunderson, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee, for a great hearing. And I do want to make sure that the Colonel knows that the legislative intent was to be very, very permissive and to use the word may rather than must. I don't want to force the patrolled, or any troopers or anything to be forced to do anything. It was just my intention that to make this an available option. And the duty weapon, again, I think with the permissive may language, I think that would leave a lot of decision making up to the officers' peers and part of that that committee. But again, I ask for a due pass to actually give tribute to meritorious service by our troopers. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gunderson. This closes the hearing on House Bill 491. I don't see Representative Fitzgerald in the room. Oh, you, okay, Julie's here now. Good, perfect. We changed up the order, so very good. Welcome, Representative
Julie. Welcome, Madam Chair, and thank you. They did that to me downtown or downstairs in Ag. Chair went off script and
yeah, okay. So we will open the hearing on House Bill 747.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Julie Dooling, and I represent three precincts in Eastern Lewis and Clark County and all of Broadwater County. And I'm bringing forth to you today House Bill 747, and the main purpose behind this is to update the Montana Code to add reference, which was inadvertently left out in a previous bill based on the same subject last session, House Bill 598, and then also to decriminalize citations issued for individuals who illegally park in a disability accessible parking space and instead make the citation a civil citation, and to increase the fine for citations for individuals who illegally park in a disability accessible parking space or access aisle from 100 to a range between 150 and 500, depending on the number of citations a person has received for illegally parking in that disability accessible space or access aisle. And to add a misdemeanor penalty for individuals who may provide or assist in providing false information in order for an unqualified person to acquire a disability parking placard or license plate. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll step aside for proponents, opponents, etc.
Fantastic. Thank you. Do we have proponents for House Bill 747?
Good afternoon, Member Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joel Peden. I am a disability rights advocate, and here today on behalf of Summit Independent Living Center, as in in Missoula, as well as Ability Montana, based in Helena. Here, they are both Centers for Independent Living, and one of our core purposes is advocacy and disability rights. I apologize for having to take your time on something that should be simple, right? Accessible parking has been around for 30 years. The law has been around for 30 years, but yet we consistently battle the fact that people feel that if they're just going to run into the pizza store for 5 minutes, that they can go ahead and park there, right? This is really a kind of a lack of courtesy type of a penalty. In the last session, we brought a bill forward that kind of strengthened the law a little bit. One of the things that was supposed to happen and didn't. If you can picture an accessible parking spot, there's usually right next to it, there's supposed to be another spot that has lines going through it, right? That's where somebody can load and unload and give people a little bit more room. That was supposed to be included in the bill, and somehow it got dropped along the way. So part of this bill is rectifying that and amending that to make sure that, you know, that that section of the parking spot is considered, you know, illegal to park there without the correct, and actually it's not even without the correct tag, because somebody would be, you know, could get a ticket even if they have an accessible parking pass hanging from their rearview mirror if they park in that spot. You just can't park there. You know, the other thing that we wanted to do is increase the penalty. It's been a long, long time since that penalty's been increased. And we still fight weekly, again, people, you know, not obeying that law. So one of the ways to encourage is to raise that penalty. The biggest part of the bill, right now in state law, it's considered a misdemeanor. And we work closely with Montana cities and towns and their legal people, because what would happen and what I experienced here, especially in Helena, is that it was considered the same as like a disorderly conduct ticket. They had to, if Senator Glim here, you know, parked illegally and went into the movie theater downtown, the police officer couldn't just leave that on your car and you have to go pay a ticket. Because it's a misdemeanor, they have to physically hand it to you, because if, and I'm not a lawyer, so if I get the terminology wrong, please forgive me, but it's a notice to appear ticket. So that means you have to go in front of a court, you have an option of a jury trial and all that type of stuff. And that's not the intent of, you know, of trying to get people to stop parking in our parking spaces. So with the consulting with the legal experts at cities and towns, it was like, you know, if we make it a citation, now it becomes like a regular parking ticket. so that not only can a police officer show up on the scene, write the ticket, leave it on the car, the city or town or whatever, whoever it is, the law enforcement, can also identify other people like city parking enforcers. So here in Helena would have the ability to write a ticket. You could, in some cities around the country, they have citizen task forces, which are volunteers who are trained, and after they complete their training, there's a way that they can also issue these tickets under, you know, tight regulations from the city. So that's really what we're trying to do. I don't know if cities and towns is going to be here. They were supposed to. Thomas was supposed to be here to answer the legal questions. If not, I will do the best that I can. It passed pretty much unanimously in the House, and I hope that you guys will agree with me that this is something we shouldn't have to discuss, but it seems like a lot of our time is spent on things like this. So with that, I will step aside and be available for questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Peden. Further proponents of House Bill 747.
Chair Mancella, members of the committee, Thomas Jodin, J-O-D-O-I-N. I'm the deputy director and general counsel, and I have to object, expert legal person from the prior proponent with the Montana League of Cities and Towns. We stand in support of House Bill 747. Prior to my time, a short time with the league, I was a city attorney here in Helena, and we struggled with this exact issue, as the prior proponent explained, with Helena only having usually four officers on the streets at any given time. And the way that the current law is written, making a accessible or violation of parking in an accessible parking spot a misdemeanor, the officers have to go and find the driver of the vehicle. It's not a strict liability offense where we can just cite the owner, the registered owner of the vehicle. And I'm not minimizing the importance of illegally parking in a disabled parking spot, but it does fall lower on the priority scale for officers to track these down. So this would make it that strict liability where we could issue basically a parking ticket, which volunteers, parking enforcers, other code enforcement officers, doesn't necessarily have to be a post-certified law enforcement officer, can issue a parking ticket, and the person can show up at the parking office, pay it, and if they want to challenge it, they can ask for appeal to the municipal court, city court, and then a judge would hear their arguments and give them a fair trial. This bill would make it significantly less restrictive in terms of time inefficiencies to pursue these offenses, and hopefully get some more teeth into them, because I think at least in Helena and Missoula, folks in certain areas, as a prior proponent knows, can take advantage of this situation, because they know if they can't be caught, they're not going to get a ticket. And stand in support and answer any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Was it Jodin? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jodin. Further proponents? Any further proponents? Any proponents online, Ms. Bramell?
Yes, Madam Chair. Online, we have Travis Hoffman.
Okay, please go ahead, Mr. Hoffman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for your time today. Not going to go into too much detail. I think Joel and the sponsor did a great job, and I thank Representative Dooling for carrying this bill. The idea behind this bill in House Bill 598 last session was really to update Montana Code annotated. Accessible parking's been in there for many years, but it was very convoluted language and very hard to understand, and oftentimes unenforceable for not only the language that was used in the code, but also for the reasons that you've heard today, with it being a misdemeanor. So the goal is not to penalize people criminally. It's kind of an education piece, why they shouldn't be parking illegally in these spaces. And so last session, this part of the bill kind of went through, and we had inadvertently left out 49.43023, which refers to people illegally parking in access aisles. So section one adds that. Section B, or yeah, B, just gives people that 3-day, sometimes people forget to hang their placard and they get a ticket, gives them 3 days. The old law was 24 hours. That had passed last session. Section two there was explained fairly well for somebody who fraudulently tries to acquire a disability parking placard that makes it even harder and increases stigma for people who actually need those parking spaces. Section four is already in state law, so officers can provide these tickets on places or ways of the state. And so this section four just spells that out in more clear, plain language. It makes it more understandable for not only law enforcement officers, but also parking enforcement officials who may not be police officers to better understand and be able to enforce the law. So it's basically language cleanup, making the statute clear and more understandable, and making it so hopefully it can actually be enforced going forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Any further proponents online, Ms. Bramall?
No more online, Madam Chair.
All right. Seeing none in the room, do we have any opponents to the bill? Opponents to bill, House Bill 747. Any online, Ms. Bramall?
No opponents online, Madam Chair.
Any informational witnesses in the room? Any online, Ms. Bramall?
None online, Madam Chair.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Friedel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This will be for Mr. Jordan.
Chair Manzella, Senator Friedel.
Madam Chair, Mr. Jordan, I have accidentally parked in these spots, specifically during the wintertime when it was covered up, and there's no signage that says it. I mean, I've been to situations where handicapped spots were only one parcel, and then there was nothing next to it, but then there was no, then there was one that had it that didn't have a sign. How do we solve that issue? Summertime's not an issue, but like we live in Montana and we have a lot of snow out there. Yeah. And I'm just kind of curious, how do we solve that issue so that there's no accidental issuance of a civil infraction?
Chair, Senator Friedel. So yeah, no, that's relatively common. It's one of the things we spent quite a bit of time tracking down businesses. So federal law, the ADA requires the business to maintain the appropriate signage, has the right wording, which I can't remember off the top of my head. I know it has to have the amount of the fine, has to have the wheelchair symbol be in blue, appropriate height, has to have the striping on the ground. So the sign is important. So when, you know, local governments find that those signs aren't installed, we have to follow up with the business owner, property owner. And if they don't, then they have a violation of our code for not putting that up. That's a separate violation. So when somebody does get a citation in that case, if we do find them and issue them a misdemeanor citation to appear in city or municipal court, we usually have that discussion, and almost always, at least in my experience, we would dismiss those citations because the person, we couldn't prove intent. And I think that highlights the problem with classifying this as a misdemeanor, is that when you're charged with a misdemeanor, you get all of the Title 46 due process, which means you got to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. You get a jury trial. You don't have a sign, you can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. When it's a civil violation like this, the threshold is preponderance of the evidence. I still think there's an issue there at a matter of fairness if the sign is up, but it certainly lets the cities and towns know that the business needs to get the appropriate signs up and get them maintained.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jordan.
Further questions? Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for Mr. Jordan, I think. Madam Chair, Mr. Jordan, in your answer to that question right there, you just mentioned that the signs need to state the fine for the violation. So since we're changing the fine, we're going to have to change all the signs. All the businesses are going to have to change their signage.
I would like to refer to Mr. Peden, or do you know the answer to that question?
So, like everything in the disability world, we're used to phasing in, where our intent is not to make everybody go out and spend another $115 for a sign. You know, the important part of the sign is that it labels the spot that's not in the, you know, that's not on the ground. And we don't, the part about having the amount of the fine is something that's been a discussion for a long time, whether it needs to be there or not. And, you know, I use the example of a speed limit sign, right? There is not anything on a speed limit sign that says if you go over the speed limit and get pulled over, here's going to be your dollar amount. And in many states, they don't even put the dollar amount on. So it's not an issue that we've ever really pushed with businesses, because you can go online very easily and find a sign that's that doesn't include that. So I don't know if that helps or not, Senator. But
maybe just a comment, Madam Chair. I guess I'd probably say that's probably a pretty good answer, really, especially when we're graduating the fine. That's going to start to get really cumbersome on a sign, trying to detail out how many times you've screwed up. We're going to keep slapping you harder. So, that was good. Thanks.
Senator Friedel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to ease the mind of the good Senator Minorth, if you look at Section 49 or in the code 49.4.302, subsection 4, subsection D, that no longer exists, but it does exist now as subsection 4, notice to a penalty of violation of this part is not required at the site of the accessibility parking spot space. So as long as a sign shows that it's a handicapped parking spot, it is not required.
Any further questions? I have one. I can ask the question and you can decide who should answer it. I appreciate what you're trying to do here, and I appreciate the clarification on the penalties, but in following up with Senator Friedel's question, how does a person seek redress of grievances if the parking spot is not properly marked? Should we have a process by which they can seek redress of grievances stated in the law, or what are your thoughts?
Chair Manzella, I don't think that's necessary. Federal law already requires them to have the signage up on all businesses that are subject to the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and I think it really comes down to, I mean, that violation of not having the appropriate signage exists whether or not somebody parks in the spot and the signage does not exist. We take care of their citation. They're good to go. We follow up with the property owner, the business manager. They have that obligation to do that already under federal law, and we work with them. Or, as often happens, the good folks like Mr. Peden will work with the business, saying, hey, look, you don't got the signs up, your sign in a coffee can and in concrete doesn't work, it falls down, gets buried, here's the requirements, what can we do to work with you? So I don't think anything necessary or anything further is necessary to clarify that with the business owners.
Okay, let me take you through the scenario that I'm seeing in my mind, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. A person parks in a spot that's not marked appropriately, and they go in and do their business, and they come out, and they've received a citation on their windshield.
Sure.
And now they have a commitment to report to a court. But they leave the scene, and now the next encounter they're going to have to address this is in the court of law. and they're going to say the spot wasn't properly marked. And where do we go from there?
Sure, Chair. So part of the need for this bill is to eliminate that, what we feel is unnecessary process for what amounts to a basic parking ticket. I mean, more serious than a basic parking ticket, but still ultimately a parking violation. So right now, because it's classified as a misdemeanor, you're right, they get a notice to appear, they go in front of a judge, they plead guilty or not guilty, they plead if they believe, you know, I wasn't aware, the sign wasn't up, they can plead not guilty, ask for a jury trial, ask for a bench trial in front of the judge and argue their case. What we're doing here is taking all that stuff off and if making it a simple parking ticket. And so they could go to the city or town's parking office that manages that, plead their case. And it usually, I mean, that's just a bureaucrat, for lack of a better word in my mind. And if they disagree, if they uphold that parking ticket, then they can still go to the municipal or city court and make all the same arguments. So that we're actually, I think, inserting an intermediate step that doesn't require a full due process in front of a court. Allows them to get out much cheaper and easier if there's not a sign that alerted them to provide a notice that they were parking in an ADA spot.
Do all towns have this little intermediate place for parking tickets?
The big ones do. Some of our extremely small communities do not have parking enforcement. I would defer to Mr. Peden as to what the nature of their enforcement strength is, but I would be surprised if they have robust ADA parking enforcement in our smaller towns.
Okay, thank you.
I would add, Chair, any parking enforcement whatsoever.
Yeah, that is my concern, is that if the parking spot is not properly noticed, it would probably be simpler for most people to just pay the fine and move on, and the parking spot doesn't get properly noticed still, is my concern. But anyway, is there any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, would you like to close on your bill? Senator Dooling.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dooling.
I'll take the promotion. I just real quick, I would like to follow up on your concern there, because everybody has cell phones now. And if you're going to get a $100 ticket, you're going to take a picture, because you're going to notice or at least you're going to get one $100 ticket, and you're only going to let it happen once, and you're going to take photos and go back and to the parking commission or city hall, town hall, and fight it because the document or the sign notification wasn't proper. But anyways, House Bill 747 is a follow-up to House Bill 598 from the 2021 legislative session and serves to modernize Montana's disability accessible parking laws, put in place a fine structure that will hopefully actually deter individuals from illegally parking in disability accessible parking spaces and access areas, and to allow law enforcement to better be able to enforce Montana's disability accessible parking laws. With that, I request a green. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Dooling. This closes the hearing on House Bill 747. And we still don't have Representative Fitzgerald in the room. So Representative Gunderson, are you ready to go with your second bill? House Bill 664.
Senator Manzel, I was born ready.
All right. All right. We will open the hearing on House Bill 664. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to be back. House Bill 664 is going to be really, really short. It's an act directing the Motor Vehicle Division of the Department of Justice to study the feasibility of driver's license renewal kiosks, establishing a reporting requirement, and directing the division to report to the Transportation Interim Committee. And I should probably make comment that this bill was actually written before I found out about that really neat program called CARS. So it's a hard one to say this is a bill that we need, but I do think that I might ask that it be toned down a little bit the more I think about it, and actually just give them the Department of Justice a little leeway in maybe doing some maize and rather than shells. But I still think they need to look at the feasibility of going to a kiosk to rural areas like Libby that are far, far, far away from a major city where you have all the facilities set up to do driver's license renewals and things like that. When I was in North Dakota, they have a kiosk system, and my cousin and I drove up to this kiosk by one of their grocery stores, and he said, "Oh, I got to renew my driver's license." And I'm going, "Oh, great. This is going to take you a while." So what did he do? Stepped out, went to the kiosk. He was done in about 5 minutes, and pretty impressive. So that's kind of what I want the Department of Justice to look at, is can we do something similar to that and integrate it into cars, or is it needed? We don't know. They're directing them to report to the Transportation Interim Committee. Just might be a real quick and simple nope. Might be the end of the report. Never know. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Gunderson. Proponents for the bill? Proponents for House Bill 664? We've seen none. Do we have any online, Ms. Brommel?
None online, Madam Chair.
Okay. Opponents for the bill? Seeing no opponents for the bill. Do we have any online, Ms. Brommel?
No opponents online, Madam Chair.
Informational witnesses?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Happy snowy day. I'm here. This is Lori Bakri, B-A-K-R-I, MVD administrator. We are certainly open to looking at the option of kiosks. There's something that many states use. Some have used very well. Some have decided not for us at all. They're expensive. They can be convenient. What kind of transactions should go on them? How much should they cost? Will we get the cost back? So I think there are a lot of things we could look at. I think step one is to get cars out and all of our online services out, and that could be a next step for us.
Great. Thank you. Informational witnesses online, Ms. Brommel?
Not online, Madam Chair.
Questions from the committee? Senator Friedel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would be for Ms. Bakri.
Madam Chair, Senator Friedel.
Madam Chair, Ms. Bakri, does cars have a kiosk system or program attached to it?
Madam Chair, Senator Friedel, it can be integrated. So in the 17 states, I don't know how many utilize kiosks in the states that they're in, but some of them do have kiosks, so it can be integrated. It would just be a programming project to get them set up.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Ms. Bakri, please.
Certainly, Madam Chair. Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bakri. Would this bill requiring your department to study the potential of a kiosk, would it slow down your process underway right now to improve your website, to cut down the time it takes to renew your license, which you explained to me when I had a constituent concern, you helped my constituent. So would this slow all that down?
Madam Chair and Senator Dunwell, thank you for the question. Absolutely not. Our priority is to get driver services out, vehicle services out, online services with both of them first, and then we'll prioritize after that. So,
further questions in the room? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have a question for Ms. Bakri as well.
Certainly, Madam Chair, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Bakri, so I am thinking that, you know, so much of what some of these kinds of bills are coming from is this idea that we're having such a difficult time with our driver's licenses, you know, with the speed and ability to get them quickly. I'm just wondering if all the upgrades that are happening at the MVD would make it possible that this would actually not be necessary and would be ultimately more work than it's worth. Do you understand? I mean, I guess what I'm looking at is this idea, and don't get me wrong, I'm not big on always putting everything on the internet, but we are putting everything on the internet. And isn't that a better kiosk than what might be being used before the internet? Yeah. Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and Senator Olson, it's a good question, actually. One of the things that we would want to study, I personally, if I'm going to do something online, I want to do it from my house. I don't want to have to go to Walmart or wherever to do that process. But it may be an option for some people, and I think in the study that would be something we would find out. Which states that it's working well? Where are they working well? Is it in remote places where they don't have a lot of internet service or there aren't a lot of computers or... Maybe it's at elder care facilities. I don't know. It would be worth looking at, is my opinion.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Seeing no further questions, Representative Gunderson, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I sure would. And I really appreciate Ms. Bakri in joining me that it's something that we definitely need to look at. And I do wholeheartedly agree that this is not a priority. And I don't think I put that anywhere into the bill. Realizing cars is a very, very important addition to our licensing and the new process. I do want to address a few things, like Senator Olson's question. Keep in mind that we're not talking about Missoula. We're talking about Libby, Montana. Libby, Montana is a long place from anywhere. We're a rural community. We don't have the amenities that places like Missoula, Kalispell, Great Falls, Billings, all of the big major towns have. So I think this would be a definite plus and an addition to cars. The internet question, that's a really good one, because the first thing that comes to mind is how do you print a driver's license on your printer? You can't. It has to be printed by a machine that's dedicated to that type of material. And that's where the kiosk comes in. It's preloaded with the card, taking the picture, putting it on, and printing it out from there, and you've got a driver's license. But again, this is not an operation that needs to be done tomorrow. Cars comes first. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gunderson. This closes the hearing on House Bill 664. Next, we have Representative Mitchell and House Bill 519. Welcome, Representative. This opens the hearing on House Bill 519.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brox Mitchell, MITCHELL, and I represent House District 3 in northwestern Montana. Today I have a bill that will authorize the starting point for the optional choice to attain a digital driver's license on your cell phone. In Montana, like many other states, I've already done, while of course requiring a hard copy of your ID. Digital driver's license is a secure version of your physical driver's license or ID card that can be stored on your cell phone. Both iPhone and Android users can already store things like credit cards, plane tickets, hotel keys, insurance cards, event tickets for concerts, stuff like that. Anytime you go to the airport now, they almost require you to have it on there. So it's already, it's being utilized. It's an extremely secure and encrypted method of holding vital information, just as you do every day with your physical wallet. Privacy is always the biggest concern and question. Individuals' identity and data are encrypted and protected against tampering and theft. Biometric authentication using Face ID, Touch ID, specifically on iPhones, already ensure that the person who added the ID to the device can be the only person that is able to view or present that ID or license in their wallet. There's already been bills that have been passed this session in the Senate here by the pro tem, Senator Bogner, that for when this does go through, if you do decide to pass it, addresses a lot of the privacy concerns specifically related to IDs that are digital. This is supported by MVD, DOJ, and a lot of law enforcement agencies across the state. And but that'll sit for proponents. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mitchell. Proponents for House Bill 519.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lori Bakri, B-A-K-R-I, the MVD administrator. We are in support of this bill. It gives people an option to move into the 21st century to have their ID on their phone. We've looked at this in several places. Three states already utilize a mobile ID, Arizona, Colorado, and Maryland. There are nine states who are ready to come on board. It gives people an option to have a secure driver's license that they always have in their pocket. It's not for everybody, but for those people who'd like to have it, I think it's a great way to provide a convenience for people. I don't know about you, but I don't always have my driver's license, and you can lose your driver's license, but you probably never lose your phone. And you can carry your phone everywhere, and you have everything that you need on it. I think if you've moved that direction, you find it very convenient, and you will utilize the service. And if you don't, you certainly have the option to keep a hard copy. So we think that it's a good thing for Montanans to be able to have that service.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bakri. Further proponents for House Bill 519? Seeing none in the room. Ms. Brommel, do we have proponents online?
No proponents online, Madam Chair.
Any opponents in the room for House Bill 519? Seeing none. Ms. Brommel, do we have any online?
No opponents online, Madam Chair.
Informational witnesses in the room? Informational witnesses online?
None online, Madam Chair.
All right. Questions from the committee? Senator Dunwell.
Thank you. For Ms. Bakri, please. Madam Chair, Senator Dunwell.
Thank you, Ms. Bakri, Madam Chair. So how would this accommodate somebody who has a combination driver's, Montana driver's license and real ID, like I have that? Mm-hmm. Would that comply with the federal requirements for real ID?
Madam Chair and Senator Dunwell, it does. You can have a traditional standard driver's license. You can have a real ID. You can have a CDL. All of those things can be presented on your mobile ID. Okay. And one of the things that I forgot to say earlier was that when I went on vacation and I went to go into an establishment, they needed my ID. I handed it to them, and they don't just look at it and look at your birth date anymore. They actually scan it. And they scan both the front and the back, and they have all of your information. I was totally unaware. I saw them scan, and then I looked at their screen, and there's my picture and all my information. So a mobile ID, you give them your phone, and it says, yes, this person is of age. It doesn't give you all of that information. It gives you just a limited amount of information that someone would need to make a decision about you. You are a driver's license holder, and you are of age, and you're real ID compliant.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No idea that was happening. Senator Fidel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would be, I'm guessing, for Ms. Bakri.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Madam Chair, Ms. Bakri. I kind of giggled a little bit when you said Colorado, because that's what happened to me. I was driving through Colorado, got pulled over, and I said I don't have my insurance card. I showed them online. They didn't accept it, got a ticket. It was ultimately expunged because I had to fax it to them. And I say fax, literally. But the question I have is, how secure is this? I mean, with all due respect to the sponsor, I'm very reluctant to hand my phone over to anybody that I don't trust. And typically, I'm not a big fan of government entities touching my phone, especially how much information is on my phone.
Madam Chair, Senator, it's a very valid question, like, who do you want to have access to your phone? So it's more secure, actually, than if you have your driver's license in your pocketbook and you lose your pocketbook, your wallet, however it is. You have to use facial recognition to open up your phone, and so no one can actually pick up your phone and open it and take a picture of it. So you would have to open it for someone who you'd wanted to give it to. And then, as Representative Mitchell did say, there is a bill going through that says you're not allowed to use your phone for any kind of search and seizure. They can't use that information. So I find it very secure. Matt Zeltwanger, the project manager for FAST, speaks much more eloquently on security than I do, but he happens to be on spring break with his kids. But it's a pretty very it is a very secure method.
Madam Chair, follow-up question.
Follow-up?
Madam Chair, Ms. Bakri, how is this implemented? Is there an application? Is there, I get a picture copy, you guys send me a PDF, and now I have a PDF copy of my driver's license. How is this implemented?
Madam Chair, Senator Friedel, it's not necessarily an application. You request the functionality, and then the functionality is taken from the car system and put on your phone. So it just, I believe it just automatically syncs to your phone if that's what you choose. It's like an app. So it's like an app. You download the app and we'll pull your information in. But you have to approve it. I'm sorry they didn't take your insurance in Colorado, because they took my insurance when I got hit the other day on my phone.
And Madam Chair, just one more follow-up question for Ms. Bakri. Madam Chair, Ms. Bakri, I was loving to have digital stuff a long time ago. Just so I understand, when you get this, there's an app you will download from the car situation, then it allows the security of that. And so that would be through the CARS program. The government says, okay, if the CARS program has it, this is a valid driver's license or real ID or a CDL, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how they're able to validate my driver's license, so that someone like he grabs my phone and he has a photocopy of it, that won't work, correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Friedel, that's correct.
Thank you,
and,
Madam Chair.
And I think the app is... you have to initiate the app with your picture. So, you know, you have to authorize the app and the information with your either thumbprint or your picture.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Bakri.
Ms. Bakri, is this a situation where you can have the digital ID in addition to a hard copy, or you have to make a choice, one or the other?
Madam Chair, you can have both.
Okay. All right.
But you can have one if you want. And if you just want your regular hard copy, you're welcome to have that.
Okay.
But if you have a digital, you also have to have a hard copy.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for the sponsor, please.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Madam Chair, Representative, can you run me through what happens when you get pulled over?
Madam Chair, Senator, so right now, if I was to be pulled over right now, I can legally give my phone to the officer to verify my insurance. So the same thing would happen with if you got pulled over by an officer right now with your ID. You would show them that. There's no way of faking it. That's the thing. And they could, I'm not sure if they would scan it or whatnot, but most of the states that have this now, and there is more than three, they can tell that it's real based off the app you're using. There's just no, you can't use a screenshot or anything. It's something that's validated through, again, Face ID or Touch ID when you access it.
To follow up.
Mm-hmm. Follow up.
Madam Chair, Representative. So usually when I get pulled over, I hand them my ID. Why is everybody laughing? It has happened. I know no one believes that, but it has happened. So I hand them my ID, they go back to the car and they run it on the computer. Are they going to take my phone back to the computer, back to the car to run it on the computer?
Madam Chair, Senator, no. Again, there's ways of validating. I'm sure that I know one of the states has it now. That's just a scanner thing that they have that, you know, validates and verifies that is real. But yeah.
So follow up.
Follow up.
Madam Chair, Representative. So all the all the officers are going to have a scanner now that they can walk up to your car with?
Madam Chair, Senator, again, I'm not sure how that part would be utilized. I'm sure that it would, Ms. Bachrie could probably potentially answer that, but.
Re-refer, Madam Chair.
Re-refer. Ms. Bachrie, please.
Madam Chair, Senator Glimm, there is a scannable device that you can use to scan currently. It can be used on a phone, so it isn't a special instrument, but you can use your just a regular cell phone to do the scanning. And my guess is in 2 years, technology will change, and we don't know exactly what it will be at that time. 2 years is a long time in tech world.
All right, thank you.
Ms. Bachrie, or I'm going to ask you, Ms. Bachrie, would it, so that's a real concern. Nobody wants to let their phone out of their sight and out of their possession. Would it be reasonable to add an amendment that a police officer under these circumstances would be required to actually maybe take a picture of the digital ID on your phone so that a person doesn't have to give up their phone?
Madam Chair, I have to think about that. I don't know if that amendment would meet the goal of what you're trying to accomplish, because I don't know that, I mean, they would really just need your driver's license number. So mm-hmm. if they could either write it down or take a picture of it, I assume that would be one thing to do. I don't know if that's the best way to do it, if that's the best way the amendment would go. What I would say is, though, this doesn't go into effect until 2025. Mm. So we have another legislative session to come back and say, oh, this is the best way to do it. This is how we would do it. This bill gives us the authorization to start talking about it and start planning for it and that kind of
thing. Okay, good. Thank you. Senator Olson? Oh, sorry.
Yep, thank you. Madam Chair, I also have a question for Ms. Bachrie. Thank you for staying there. Madam Chair, Ms. Bachrie, my question actually goes to the amendment that was put on. And I understand why the amendment was put on, because they want to make it clear that we can still have our old driver's licenses, not that we all have to go online digital when my phone, for example, doesn't really hold very many apps. But my question is, when we added in or hard copy version, what ends up happening with that is we have to remember that an insurance card is just a number. It's a flat piece of paper that you can make a million copies of it and you have exactly what the insurance company gave you. But when we have a driver's license, this makes it sound like you could actually have a card, hard copy as a copy version of your driver's license. Now, I've made those when I travel, so then in case I lose stuff, I know what my driver's license says. I know what my passport says. But that certainly can't be used in the place of a driver's license. So my question really is going to this or hard copy version. I think we need to work on that language to make it clear that a copy of your driver's license that you may hold with you is not the same thing as a driver's license. And I guess that's because we all know that driver's licenses, there are ways of telling whether they're fake, but you couldn't do that with a copy. So for those reasons, I'm asking you if we could come up with better language on that hard copy. And I wasn't in the house when you changed it. So I know that it wasn't in the original version of the bill. So anyway, do you have suggestions on that?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, it's a good point. I don't know that we were just looking for the right words. If those are not the right words, I think we're open to a different terminology, whether it's says traditional driver's license or something like that, that would be fine. My only concern is at this point, if we amend it, how does that work process-wise? I would hate to see the bill stop when we could make that change at any time, or we could interpret hard copy in a way at MVD that it is the traditional driver's license. So I don't know if Representative Mitchell
follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
I'm not worried, Ms. Bachrie, Madam Chair, Ms. Bachrie. I'm not worried about how you guys interpret it. I'm actually worried about somebody thinking that they can have a hard copy version of their driver's license, and that that is the same thing as having their originally issued driver's license. And so I don't know what the language is, but exactly. But I do know that this, by leaving hard copy version in this bill, that really creates a double meaning, which we don't really want to do in the law.
Madam Chair.
Traditional state standard. Issued.
Yeah. And I think we're both open to a different terminology.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bakri.
Further questions from the committee? Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Friedel.
I apologize. This one kind of popped me in my head. For the sponsor, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Senator Friedel.
Madam Chair, Representative. As I was reading your bill and we were discussing in regards to the Senate bill that Senator Bogner brought in regards to not being able to take this as evidence, I noticed you did not have a coordinating information and coordinating language in here that in the event that his bill happens to die, that this would die as well, because I would be very uncomfortable that if that didn't pass, this passed, then we now have a situation where I would be adamantly against this bill.
Madam Chair, Senator, his bill passed the Senate, I think, 49-1. I don't anticipate that going down. But I would definitely have the same concerns you did if that did not pass. And we also plan to work during the interim, because, again, this does have a delayed effect date of even after the next session. But it's good to get this kind of groundwork laid down if this does go through before then, to work on a lot of different ways on how we can make sure that the privacy is, of course, again, as I said in my open, it's the biggest concern, and how we can elaborate on that. And I know the states that have passed this already, they have, you know, a pretty good chunk of different things, and we love to, you know, work to expand on that here and, you know, kind of do what they've done there. So
thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing no further questions, Senator Representative Mitchell, would you like to close on your bill?
Madam Chair, members, thank you. I think that the way the bill is written right now, I think addresses what we need to, what we're trying to address. And I'm not sure an amendment would really change anything. This has been taken directly from other states, the kind of the wordage, and they've had no problems with their implementation and whatnot, and how they go about real ID, driver's license, whatnot. But, you know, again, the option to attain a driver's license in your wallet provides a convenient, more secure way to present your driver's license and state IDs while offering superior security and privacy over a physical wallet. And with that, I request that you pass. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Representative Mitchell. This closes the hearing on House Bill 519. Welcome, Representative Fitzgerald. Are you ready to present? We will now open the hearing on House Bill 470. Welcome.
Madam Chairman, get a quick breath here, and committee members, pleasure to be here. For the record, my name is Ross Fitzgerald, RossFitzGerald, House District 17, Teton, Pondere, and a little chunk of Lewis and Clark County, Madam Chair. I bring before you today for your consideration House Bill 470. This is just another polish of last session's move over, slow down bill. Representative Durham had one come through here. This is just a complement to that one. We didn't get coordinated in time, but nonetheless, they're both complementary toward the effort of providing security and certainly disincentives for being stupid. So, what this does in this particular bill, Madam Chairman, is it basically includes folks that we forgot last time around, which means not only for emergency responders, but highway maintenance, worker vehicles and workers, which includes the DOT. We also forgot to include utility companies, both private and cooperative. So we tried to encompass everybody that may or may not be around highway working under, over, or during, as well as emergencies. Certainly a safety bill in its truest form. And let's see here. I think for the most part, it's fairly self-explanatory. There was another one on a new section 4, talking about stationary highway worker vehicles. which that basically would encompass our utility workers, be, you know, below and above ground on highways. We've had a number of incidents of all kinds, but you probably remember last session, the tragedy down at Columbus, and this is just trying to reinforce some of that effort to make people slow down and move over for the safety of anybody that's working on near the highways of Montana. And it doesn't preempt all the previous requirements for signage. We did add, which Representative Durham's bill not necessarily omitted, but the Highway Patrol requested that we be more definitive in our posted speed limits on a incident or a worker zone. So you'll see, you know, on page 3 under section 4, it goes into after moving over lanes 30 miles an hour below posted speed on a state highway or county road, and then one half the posted speed. What they were having problems with, committee, was there was no way to provide evidence in a court by subjective evaluation, even though we know that by looking at a vehicle going through a scene at an excessive speed that they were in error, creating a dangerous environment. But there was no way to put that on paper without a certain amount of definitive reduction with a speed gun. And even though they're busier than heck on most emergency scenes, at least we identified that at their request. The reckless endangerment stays as a addition from last session, and that basically gives them a lot of leniency as far as writing folks up that are stupid. Madam Chair, I think with, like I say, we didn't, we had a little mistake in here earlier with lighting, but we do not have in here blue lights on these emergency vehicles. Blue lights are only for law enforcement, which they will be noticeable in an emergency scene as well. With that, Madam Chair, committee, this is a very complimentary bill to, like I said, Representative Durham, so it should kind of complete the pie short of increasing fines and penalties, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fitzgerald. Do we have proponents for this bill?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jesse Luther, L-U-T-H-E-R, on behalf of the Association of Montana Troopers, we rise in support of this bill. Representative Fitzgerald did such a great job. He gave you all of my testimony. So I will just hit a few high points of things that we like. Page 1, line 24, we were glad that they eliminated blue lights. Blue lights are something that we like reserved for law enforcement, so folks know that it is a law enforcement vehicle coming through. I personally like the definition of highway worker vehicle. Some of the bills that you've previously seen this session were getting fairly specific as to which types of vehicles, and folks were wondering why that certain ones were missing. So this is a broad definition that is intended to apply to any of those vehicles that are authorized to be working alongside our highway and encapsulates everyone. The other piece that we like and specifically asked for, Representative Fitzgerald noted at section 4 at the bottom of page 2, top of page 3. After the move over bill from last session went through, it had amended the speeds out, and so it was a reasonable amount below the speed limit for the conditions of the road. What we found is when we were writing tickets to individuals who were speeding past the scene of crashes, that if those individuals then chose to challenge those tickets in court, their attorneys were creative and saying it was such a subjective standard, they were moving to throw that evidence out, and judges were granting that. So folks who were actually speeding through accident scenes are no longer being held accountable if they challenge it on that basis. So we ask for the speeds to come back in. On very serious crash scenes, we actually do have somebody there monitoring the speeds of the vehicles passing. So they are clocked, and we do know how fast they were going when they went through that accident scene. Madam Chair, we think this is a really good bill. We appreciate Representative Fitzgerald for working with us and addressing some concerns, and we urge it to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Luther. Further proponents?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, and I represent the Montana Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. When we look at bills, we look at them and evaluate them from the perspective of public safety, and that's why we're here to support this bill today. Not only is this a public safety bill, but it's an officer and highway worker safety bill. We think it goes a long way. I don't have more to add than what has previously been shared with you, so I'd encourage you to concur. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Jim Dusenberry, D-U-S-E-N-B-E-R-R-Y, and I represent the Montana Tow Truck Association. Pretty much the items in the bill that needed to be said have already been spoken. I just wanted to add to a couple things. I was just recently in D.C., and we had Jim Hoshich from the Department of Transportation come and talk to us a little bit about highway safety. TRAA, which is the national organization that I'm a part of, is working a slow down move over bill through the Senate now. Senator McGovern is carrying that. But one of the highlights he brought to mind that kind of struck me was he said every 15 seconds of every day there is an accident on our highways. Maybe a struck by, it may be an accident, or it might be a near miss. But every 15 seconds, so you let that think in a little bit, this is an important item for the guys that work on the highway. I've been out there enough times and I've had elbows hit, you know, the wind, or grabbed a guy and pulled him back in. So it's something to be aware of. Just one little item, there was 15,000 or roughly 15,000 people killed, injured, or hit just changing their tires alongside the road over the years. So strengthening this law and including all the players that are out there on the highway is really important. Making the public aware of the slowdown move over law is even more important. And one of the things that kind of struck home too when I was reading, AAA did a survey about slowdown move over. 67% of the people driving the highways do not know what slowdown move over is yet. So we've got a long ways to go with this, but I feel getting a bill out there with some teeth in it, some awareness, and making people aware of slow down, move over is important. We kill a tower every 6 days in the United States, so it's pretty near and dear to my heart. But all the other disciplines have a similar record, some of them quite not quite as bad, some of them worse. But informing the public is one step, but making unlawful and finding violators is more important, making this puzzle all work. So we've got a lot more work to do, but this is a great step in the right direction. I urge you to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dusenberry. Further proponents?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Dwayne Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and I'm the Executive Director of the Montana Trucking Association. And so we have members that provide the service online because they have trucks, a lot of tow companies, electrical companies, and then we have other members that unfortunately need their service at times. We also appreciate the highway maintenance folks, especially in the winter when it comes to plowing and making sure we have good roads. But more importantly, we're an advocate of making sure that everybody makes it home at the end of their job, at the end of their night. And so we appreciate the sponsors' diligence in trying to make sure that we put in different strengths to make sure that happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Further proponents? Seeing none in the room. Ms. Brommel, do we have proponents online?
None online, Madam Chair.
Okay, do we have opponents in the room? Any opponents to House Bill 470? Seeing none, do we have any online, Ms. Brommel?
None online, Madam Chair.
Informational witnesses in the room?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Swartz, J-O-N, S as in Sam, W-A-R-T-Z. I'm the administrator of the maintenance division for the Montana Department of Transportation, and here if you have any questions for the department.
Thank you, Mr. Swartz. Any further informational witnesses? Any online, Ms. Brommel?
None online, Madam Chair.
Questions from the committee? Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For Ms. Luther.
Madam Chair, Senator Glimm.
Madam Chair, Ms. Luther, let me know if I'm reading this wrong, but I think under our definitions now, a snowplow counts. And if that's the case, if you're on a two-lane road and you're meeting a snowplow, you would have to slow down to 20 miles an hour under the speed limit.
Madam Chair, Senator Glimm, no, in Section 4, it was amended so it only applies to a stationary worker vehicle. So if they're out there and they've set up the appropriate signage and are parked alongside the highway doing some work, I think if it's an oncoming traffic thing that is just, my thing is the wrong word, but if it's oncoming traffic that's passing, you are not required to slow down as instructed in Section 4.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's a question for, I'll just do the sponsor, please.
Representative Fitzgerald, please.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Fitzgerald, how are you?
Just dandy.
It's good to see you. My question goes to the language on page 3, and I appreciate this bill, and I feel like we should all be more careful in these situations. But the thing that it looks to me that on line 23, you're trying to say that somebody has to intentionally strike one of those orange cones. So I'm thinking of those orange cones now that sometimes get knocked over when a big semi's in front of you and they have that suction and the cone gets. So I imagine that if the cone is laying in the middle of the road, we're not going to get a ticket. But it doesn't seem like the accidental, that it's really clear because of the way we define intentionally. I guess I'm trying to figure out where it says that if you accidentally hit one of those orange cones, that you're not recklessly endangering somebody.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I'm not the guy that makes rules on cones, but I will just express my thoughts as to those cones, depending on where they're at, can be awfully close to an accident scene in general. But I would say that it's intentionally or not, it's probably not the highest concern unless you get inside it quite a ways. I might miss, Madam Chairman, is defer that to the folks that are actually on scene, possibly tow truck drivers.
Mr. Dusenberry, are you willing to field that question?
Hello, Madam Chairman, Representative Olson. I can try. I'm not legal bound, but when we're teaching a TIMS program, basically we put the cones out to guide traffic around, and one of the jokes they say, if you start hearing cones popping, you better start hitting the ditch. So I would say that, yes, there's probably room for a citation if you're getting the cones. That's supposed to be a safe work zone for the people on the right, if I'm understanding your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, sir. I guess I'm thinking of more of those situations where you have a long line of cones, so you have a lot of workers, and you have the long line of cones that have us moving from one lane to another, and in those long line of cones, they sometimes get knocked out. They sometimes are in the, but we're basically saying that if you accidentally, that you have to intentionally strike it, but we're making it very clear that that's only to avoid something in an emergency or to protect the health and safety. I'm just wondering about the accidental hitting of these cones based upon them changing position because of a truck that was in front of you, that kind of stuff. I'm just wondering if we have the language that makes it clear that accidentally hitting a cone isn't the same thing as reckless endangerment of a highway worker, even though it's part of the definition.
think I better defer that to a higher authority, and Mr. Schwartz would probably
Mr. Schwartz, are you willing to field that question?
Yeah.
Do you need it repeated? Or?
Sure, Madam Chair, Senator Olson. So just a couple of clarifications. So the language that you're referencing on page 3 is already in current law. It's actually, if you go to page 4, it's under, it's at the bottom of page 4. It's actually in 61.8.301. This language was, I'm not sure which bill it was, and I believe it was in 2019, maybe 2017. We had a highway worker, construction worker, struck in a work zone in Billings and was killed. It was an impaired driver that went through the work zone. And so that was what this language was really for. If you look at the language and the way I read it, Senator, in terms of under section 5 subsection 2, it's purposefully, knowingly, and negligently drives a motor vehicle in a highway work zone based on all those factors. So I think it's been pretty clear based on the last several years that this language has already been in law. I think it works for the department and the construction workers out there.
Thank you. That does help to know that the language has already been being used and it hasn't been a problem. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Further questions from the committee? I guess I have one for the sponsor, please, or I'll start with the sponsor and let you redirect if you need to. Ms. Representative Fitzgerald, I understand what you're trying to accomplish, and I appreciate it. I think that we need to give our highway workers some slack and some protection. But this is pretty significant changes and a bit complicated, where we have a 20-mile-an-hour decrease in speed if we're on the interstate, a 30-mile-an-hour. What was that? Huh? Avon calling. Interesting. It's like church bells ringing. Is it like echoing in a time, ushering in a particular time? That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, 30 miles an hour. It seems to me like this is going to require some education for our citizens. Would we anticipate this being built into drivers' training programs? And how are our old people like me going to learn about this until we get pulled over and given a ticket?
Madam Chair, terrific question. In fact, it's one of my notes on my closing.
Okay.
But I'm glad you brought it up, because we have been in discussions generally with both the Highway Patrol, but most certainly the OPI. And the folks down there, and last session, one of the driver's training folks from one of the districts was taking that on as a task to start that curricula or integrate the curricula into the driver's ed training program for those kids in high school. And then additionally, you know, with that speed thing, it's a matter of signage as well. But we are still working with the OPI to put that into that curriculum, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you're on top of it. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing no further questions, Representative Fitzgerald, would you like to close on your bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I certainly would appreciate the good hearing. This is pretty important for all of us that have been on emergency scenes. Being in the fire protection business for 39 years, as Mr. Dusenberry stated earlier, we've been what I call near hits. Sometimes in the airplane business, they call them near misses. I call them near hits. But nonetheless, we appreciate all the folks that came up here to testify and appreciate a due pass on House Bill 470, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fitzgerald. This now closes the hearing on House Bill 470. All right, good work, committee. We do have at least a couple pieces of executive action that we need to do. Yeah. Please take out the bills that are on the board here. Oopsie. Okay, we will open executive action on Senate Bill 521, which is Senator Vance's bill. Mr. Vice Chair, would you please move the bill?
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 521 be due pass. It's an act of general revising laws related to broadband deployment and right-of-way, revising law related to broadband deployment on state highways or interstate right-of-ways, allowing applicants to seek an exemption to paying the fair market value subject to approval.
Thank you. Mr. Carroll, are there amendments?
Madam Chair, there is an amendment. I'll be passing out Senate Bill 521.1.1.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have an issue with this particular Senate bill amendment.
Uh-oh. Okay, well.
I do not believe. I don't think I can.
Madam Chair and Senators, yeah, that was a computer error. My colleague who drafted it, there's a drop-down menu, and he clicked on the wrong Vance. We have not cleared out 2021 legislators yet.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question of our staff?
Certainly.
Madam Chair, Mr. Campbell, it is okay for me to move this, even though that was a technical error.
Yeah, I think it's fine, Senator.
Why don't we actually let Senator Vance move her amendment or her husband's amendment as it is, and there will at least be a tie there, a connection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move SB 0521.001.001.
Thank you. Would you like to explain it, Senator Vance, or would you like to have Mr. Carroll explain it?
I would like for Mr. Carroll to help me out here a little bit. Thank you.
One moment, Madam Chair.
Okay. You caught that right away.
Okay, Madam Chair, so this amendment is on pages 2 and 3 of the bill. It's the language that's in red. Mm-hmm. So in subsection 4 on page 2, it would specify that the maximum length of time for these rights-of-way contracts would be 30 years. And on page 3, there are changes to the definition of public interest so that if the amendment passes, the definition of public interest in the bill would be public interest. Sorry, one second. So you kind of start the definition section up in subsection 7. For the purposes of this section, then you jump down to subsection C, public interest, including the determination of clean energy and broadband infrastructure projects that provide connectivity to Montana citizens, is determined by state policy and Federal Highway Administration guidance and regulation, including but not limited to 23 CFR 710.403. Madam Chairman.
All right. Senator Vance, did you discuss this amendment with the stakeholders?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I did. And I believe that all the stakeholders were pretty much okay with it. It's well, as stated in the hearing that we had, this has been going on for a number of years. We had legislation last session, tried to fix it up, and I think, anyway, I think that stakeholders are still okay, still working through. We would like to get something in our statutes that will make it a situation that the conversations and the words that are used with the Department of Transportation hold true.
Thank you. Further conversation, further discussion on the amendment? Question? Question's been called. We'll do a roll call vote for the benefit of Ms. Burke and our missing attendees.
Vice Chair Friedel.
Yes.
Senator Olson.
Yes.
Senator Beard.
Yes.
Senator Denwell.
Yes.
Senator Glimm.
Yes.
Senator Gross.
I apologize, Madam Chair. I'll be doing the proxies. I vote for Senators Gross and Kelker. Both vote yes.
Senator Mandeville.
Aye by proxy.
Senator Treves.
Yes.
Senator Usher. Senator Vance.
Yes.
Chair Manzella.
Yes. All right. Senator Vance, would you like to move your bill as amended?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have language. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 521, amended once, do pass.
Perfect. Discussion on Senate Bill 521 as amended. Senator Usher.
Madam Chair, I hate to go against my seatmate here, but I think this is, I don't like this bill. I think that an exception to companies that are multi-billion dollar companies that are public companies are not going to pass on the savings to Montana residents. They're going to give them to their stockholders. So they should be paying the state what is fair market value. Not the exception. They should not be getting the exception.
I appreciate your comments. Senator Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be voting yes on this bill because I live in an underserved area and I just want good service at this point. Thank you. I will be voting yes.
Madam Chair. Dunwell.
Madam Chair, I agree with Senator Usher and also Senator Beard, although I will be voting no. I think it's very reasonable to ask that any savings be passed on to the consumers, but the proponents didn't seem to have an appetite for that. So they do have the money, and this is the business they're in. They're going to provide connectivity. So I'm a no. They don't need this.
Further discussion? Senator Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just remind the committee that the discussion that we had in the hearing, it's about connectivity. It is not so much about the fee of anyway, it's about the connectivity. Connecting it all up.
I was trying to remember the conversation that I had, and it may have been with Ms. Luther. And when the negotiations started, the fair market value was a very exorbitant rate, $22 million per mile. How much? $22 million for 150 miles. And so that negotiation has been negotiated down to $100 a mile. So with that, I think that is good for our citizens and good for the project of bringing good service to Montana.
Manager.
Senator Dunwell.
Thanks for a second go around. I have a little note here. It needs a fiscal note. Did we get a fiscal note on this to see how much it would cost the state to give this exception?
That's a good point.
This funding exception?
Good question. Senator Vance.
Madam Chair and committee, I have a copy of the fiscal note here that I could certainly pass around for us to look at. In here, it states that it is undeterminable at this time. They can't predict the impact, probably based because they're not sure how much right away would be.
Mr. Carroll, can you take over the big screen and put that fiscal note on the screen for us so that we can all review it?
Madam Chair, I can, but it will take a minute for me to get into the Zoom, so if the discussion proceeds, I'll let you know when I'm in and taking over.
All right. Senator Olson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm reading the fiscal note, and that's where some of my concerns come from. I don't understand what it means that future relocation costs will be incurred and that the state's share will be 75% of all relocation costs. And that I do think that defining fair market value in a statute, which is also mentioned in the technical notes, makes it really difficult to consider adjusting the fees in the future based upon what the true cost might be or what inflation might bring us. And we certainly are in a period of, you know, experiencing expenses and costs that none of us are really prepared in our mind to believe is happening. So I do think that I would just like to say I am a very reluctant no. I want to see us do this, but we have disagreement. Some people refer to, you know, broadband as infrastructure, and that's where the money is coming from. And yet, and we're asking them to have utility access to utility right of ways, and yet we're considering them not a utility. So I think that the bill's just not ready to go. I think we have a lot of things that need to be addressed when we're doing this. And I get it that we all want to be connected, and we certainly need to make sure that broadband is spread out through the state. But I think it requires more than this just little bill at the last minute. I think we really need to start looking at this in a much more comprehensive way. So for those reasons, I'm a no too, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Mr. Carroll is going to take over the screen, so we might lose you momentarily.
I think that's going to be big enough to read, but I'm going to have to scroll down slowly as I'll give people some time to adjust to that and then scroll down further.
Can you please scroll down to the fiscal analysis and assumptions? Maybe should we read that onto the record since we don't have the actual fiscal note in front of us? Understandable by treatment. Okay, scrolling up.
Mr. Campbell, you see at the top right there where it says 2 of 2? See where it says 150%?
Yep.
You see the little emblem?
Yeah.
Right there, that'll look strange or pop it up. There you go. Sorry, you can do the other one. I couldn't see
it over here. Oh, there we go.
Okay. I say you should be able to pop it up all the way.
Okay, it is assumed that the Federal Highway Administration will accept these fair market value definitions? Is it?
Assume the federal.
Can we make that assumption?
We'll accept fair market.
Ms. Luther, you're in the room, so you're fair game for a question. If you, do we have any fair market value assessments on other states to go by, to gauge by?
Madam Chair, in this area, specifically as it relates to broadband, it varies among the states widely. The exemption language is in the bill. This was new guidance from the Federal Highway Administration in the spring of 2021 that said for certain connectivity and clean energy projects, an applicant who is not a utility may apply to access the interstate right-of-way longitudinally, and they may also apply to the Federal Highway Administration for an exemption. An exemption, no one knows what that means because the feds have yet to grant one. So the exemption could be zero. The exemption could be something less than the state determines is fair market value. The feds still have a lot of control over these interstate highways going through the state, and the states manage them. So, for example, last session in Wyoming, they passed a bill trying to grant themselves under this clean energy and connectivity guidance a blanket exemption for the entire state for broadband. So the state would charge $0 for broadband installation in the right-of-way. The feds have rejected that application. So they didn't want to give blanket exemptions based on that. We have not found a state that has had the feds actually grant one of these exemptions for the reduction at this point in time. That said, there are other states that just allow broadband in the right-of-way without cost. Some states do charge cost. Utah says fair market value, but we are unsure what that amount is. But that is in line with the federal guidance, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. That helps quite a bit. Senator Glimm?
Madam Chair, I was just going to say that I think most of this broadband stuff is being installed with ARPA dollars. And so if we're paying extra money to get the ground to put it in, it's just more dollars that we're using of tax dollars to put in to the system of expanding broadband. So it's the same thing. It's out of one pocket into the other.
Senator Beard, did you have a comment?
Yes, I just wanted to ask Ms. Luther.
Without objection.
Without objection.
Go ahead.
Ms. Luther, you talked about the state negotiates with the Federal Highway Administration. Is that the state, Montana Department of Transportation, them specifically, or the administration, or...
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, as far as it relates to accessing the right-of-way, the negotiation is with MDT. They are connected to federal highways, so they help the applicant with their application and take it to federal highways for approval. Federal highways has to approve it first, and then the application comes back to the state MDT. They would have 90 days to approve it. DOA has also been involved in this particular issue due to the broadband and use of ARPA dollars and the BEAD dollars that are also coming back down to the state to ensure that we have access to spend those monies efficiently.
Follow up on that.
Follow up.
Okay, what about, are we looking at state highways? Not all of these projects are going to be along interstate.
Madam Chair, Senator Beard. State highways, the access to that is controlled by the Montana Department of Transportation. And in my many, many conversations over many, many months with MDT, the MDT allows access for broadband into state highways either longitudinally or laterally, like when you bore under the highway, at zero cost to the provider.
Senator Usher, you'll be next.
First question for Ms. Luther. I didn't write it down. Can you tell us who you're representing on in this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Usher, I am currently representing Mitsubishi Power Americas because that is who I worked on the bill for last time, and because there were some mess ups, we are trying to do the right thing and fix it so it works for all parties.
Thank you. And a follow-up for a question for, not a question, but a comment on Senator Glimm's. So my understanding is if we are using ARPA to do the broadband, and the ARPA is being used to pay MDT. We're able to use that money and get it unencumbered because ARPA funds have restrictions on what we're allowed to use it for. If we're paying into MDT, it all of a sudden becomes general fund money and not encumbered or restricted funds. Correct?
I suppose that is possible.
I'm sorry, you lost me there. So
so the monies we get from the federal government for ARPA are restricted to what we're allowed to use them
for. Right, broadband is one of those.
Yeah, and so we're allowed to use it for broadband. If we're helping these companies pay MDOT for the right-of-way use, they go into MDT, and then they go in the general fund, and we can use them for whatever we want. So we're taking restricted funds, federal funds, could be, taking restricted federal funds and siphoning it through and opening up to whatever we want to use it for in the future.
Madam Chair, it might not be completely that good. It still could be good, and it maybe even better. If those would drop into the HESRA account for match with federal dollars for roads, then you multiply it by.
Here we go. Yeah. All right. Senator Dunwell and Senator Olson. Thanks. Has her hand up.
So I had my hand up. I just would like a further explanation of the fiscal note. If you wouldn't mind, Mr. Carroll, Madam Chair, paging back up to, I believe it was number 2 on the assumption.
One moment.
Thank you.
And while we're waiting for that, my question to Ms. Luther is going to be, what's going to be the worst case scenario if we pass this? And
number 2 on
and the feds don't grant us what we're asking for, the applications.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, number 4.
The feds may not grant the exemption, that is true. I think the feds are pretty reasonable working with highways to ensure that the state has the ability to manage those on behalf of the federal government. The federal government has issued that guidance saying we want these projects and we want the states to think about more creatively about using the right-of-way for opportunities such as this. I know with the BEAD program, which is the next tranche of federal funding that the state is set to receive for the broadband projects, in that application, the state of Montana specifically has to list if there are any potential impediments to broadband being put in anywhere, or if there are any laws on the books or things that the state needs. This bill will help the state of Montana probably get some additional funds because we don't have to put that there is any issues. We fixed the Dig Once statute in Section 1, so that is very clear, and we have a process in place. So if someone does need to access this right-of-way for the purpose of broadband, we would be good to go if this bill passes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Luther. All right, back to Ms. Dunwell's question. Senator Dunwell, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. It was actually number 4 under assumptions, and I'm twisting around here. No, we don't have. Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks. We didn't have copies for everybody. So, all right. If this bill, so the way I'm reading it, I guess Mr. Carroll, is that under SB 521, an approved applicant is assessed a fair market value of $100 a mile. So that's what they would be paying if they got this exception.
Right.
Or $3,000 a mile for a 30-year ROW use agreement. Right of way. Thank you. So is there anywhere in this fiscal note that gives us a comparison of what the fair market value is so we know what they're getting an exception to?
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm sorry I can't be more helpful, but I have no experience with fiscal notes.
Okay.
Senator Glimm.
Thank you. Madam Chair, maybe a question for Mr. Carroll about process. We've basically got to move this out today if we're going to save it, right?
Right. Yes.
But we don't meet tomorrow.
It's got to move today. Unless you want to come in tomorrow and have a special committee hearing.
If you can find free time for that, Madam Chair, that would be cool. But
Madam Chair and Senators, yes, it has to be moved today because Tuesday is the transmittal day for transmittal of appropriations bills, revenue bills, and bills proposing referenda. So this has to be a revenue bill since it's a Senate bill that hasn't transmitted yet. And so it has to transmit on Tuesday if it's going to survive. And so it has to be passed out of this committee today to make it to that deadline if it's going to proceed.
Madam Chair, I'm going to support the bill and let's move it on and we have time going forward. It's just a Senate bill. It's going to go all the way through the House. We can raise some of these questions. I think it's worth keeping alive.
I agree.
But I think that there's some questions that need to be sorted out. I'm going to vote it out. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Those words of wisdom. I believe those are good words of wisdom. And we now know who's an evil genius on the committee.
Evil, maybe. I don't know about the genius part.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would just encourage us to really ask ourselves, what are we really trying to do that's beneficial for the state? We had nobody come in other than companies to talk about this bill. And I don't understand why we don't have a much more broad conversation and why it's being brought to transportation without some kind of big presentation about how it fits in with all of the rest of the broadband stuff. And so I guess I'm just really at a loss. And if this is so important, why it's coming at the very last minute, right before the deadline, and not as part of a, big explanation of how all of this fits together for our broadband success. So I hate to vote no against any of this stuff, but until I see, we haven't even addressed the technical concerns of this bill in this committee. And we have a fiscal note that was so rushed, it says undetermined. And we also know that the basic assumptions aren't even indicated that they're even going to happen. So I don't know. I don't see how, when we vote to pass something out and then we're going to pass it to the floor just as quickly, we're actually saying that we have studied this and that we believe that we're doing something beneficial. And I just can't say that without having a lot more of the stakeholders, even in the room. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the time.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Beard, did you have a comment or did you want to call the question?
I would really love to call the question so we can continue on with all the EAs we have yet to do.
Thank you, Senator Beard. Question has been called. We'll take a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Friedel.
Yes.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. I vote no, and I vote Senator Gross and Senator Kelker no by proxy.
Senator Beard.
Yes.
Senator Dunwell.
No.
Senator Glimm.
Yes.
Senator Mandeville.
Yes.
Senator Treves.
Yes.
Senator Usher.
No.
Senator Vance.
Yes.
Chair Manzella.
Yes.
7 yes, 5 no.
Senate Bill 521 has passed out of this committee. Senator Vance, you can have fun with it on the floor.
Yeah. No kidding.
All right. Next on our list is House Bill 764, which is Senator Logie's bill. Excuse me, Representative Logie's bill. And Mr. Vice Chair, would you please move the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House Bill 764 be do concur. It's an act in revising certain license plate fees requiring motor vehicle division of the Department of Justice and the Department of Transportation to set fees commensurate to with cost. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. And there is an amendment in the process of going around.
Madam Chair, I'll just briefly say that this is Amendment 764.2.1 requested by Senator Olson.
Thank you. Senator Olson, do you have the amendment? Would you, Mr. Okay, Senator, Mr. Carroll is going to explain it if with your permission.
Yes, I'm there.
Blessing.
I just. That's
okay, Madam Chair, if when you get the amendment, if you'll turn to page 4, that's the first change that it's going to make. So the instead of saying determined by the department commensurate with the costs, it would be a $12 fee for a new standard license plate. Then on page 5, instead of saying determined by the department commensurate with the costs, it would be a $16 fee for when you keep the same license plate when you're renewing. And then on page 7, instead of saying determined by the department commensurate with the costs, we'd be reverting to the current $2 fee that's in code. And then finally, on page 8, begins a coordination instruction with House Bill 333, which is also in our committee's possession. So those changes that I was talking about 12 and 16, they're in this same section, 61-3-321. And House Bill 333 has some changes that are completely unrelated, and it also has some proposed changes to those that same $12 and $16 section. And so the unrelated changes in 333 would move forward with this, and the this bill would then control for that $12 and $16 change, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll. Senator Olson, would you like to move the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to amend House Bill number 764 with House Bill 764 with amendment number HB 764.2.1.
Thank you. All right, and we've already had the explanation. This matches the notes that I made as far as the $12 and $16 changes, caps. Any further discussion needed? Questions been called? Can we do a voice vote? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right. The amendment has been passed. Mr. Vice Chair, would you move the bill as amended?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House Bill 764 be amended once. Do concur.
Okay. Discussion on the bill as amended.
Question.
Question's been called. Can we do a voice vote? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Okay, Forrest is a nay. And proxies.
Madam Chair, I vote. Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Yes, sorry, Madam Chair, I vote. I don't vote, Madam Chair. Senators Kelker and Gross vote aye by proxy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And did they also vote aye by proxy on the amendment, Senator Olson?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. And is that everybody? Okay. So,
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Do we have a we have to assign a carrier, please?
The vote tally was 10 to 11.
I had 11-1 as well.
Okay. 11-1. And who would like to carry this bill on the floor? Senator Vance will carry it. Great. Thank you, Senator Vance. All right. House Bill 764 has passed committee. Senator Vance will carry it on the floor. All right. One more. House Bill 622 is next.
Madam Chair, we had a miracle.
A miracle. Oh, a miracle. Congratulations, she's been healed. Mr. Vice Chair, would you please move House Bill 622?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move that House Bill 622 do concur in an act, in, act providing a non-resident titling of vehicles, providing the Motor Vehicle Division of the Department of Justice Authority legislative direction to implement non-resident titling.
All right. Discussion on House Bill 622. Do we have amendments on this one, Mr. Chair?
Madam Chair, we amended this bill previously in executive action. We amended it so it has an immediate effective date, Madam Chair.
I believe the delay was that Senator Olson wanted to do some research. So her hand is up. So Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I did meet with an hour with a company that will definitely benefit from this bill, being allowed to do something that will be the first one in the country to do and should bring in quite a bit of revenue to the state of Montana. So I feel comfortable about those purposes being met. We did do a little bit of talking about title washing and skipping and a lot of these title problems that we see from state to state. He's indicated that the feds should really look at doing that. But I think it might be something that we as a committee might also want to study because they are very real problems. And he believes that his program will actually catch more of those problem titles than happen otherwise. And so for those reasons, I will be a hopeful yet a skeptical yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your diligence on this, Senator Olson. Any further conversation concerning 622?
Question.
Question's been called. Can we do a voice vote? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Proxies?
Madam Chair, Senators Gross and Kelker vote aye by proxy.
Great. So this passes unanimously. Would you like to carry this, Senator Usher? All right. Senator Usher is the carrier of House Bill 622. Okay, good work, committee. Is there any bills that we heard today that you'd like to take executive action on that we could kick out of here real quick? Item 519, Mitchell's ID, driver's license ID, digital ID.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment coming on that one, I hope.
Okay.
Madam Chair, may I suggest 491? That's the act of revising patrol law officers, creating a recognition of meritorious services. Oh, never mind then.
Okay.
Madam Chair, since these are all House bills, can we just put them off?
We can, but I would prefer to kick out the easy ones just to keep things rolling. So,
Madam Chair, does anybody have any issues with 664?
664, we could do.
I think that wasn't that the Madam Chair, that also is one with the amendment to fix that language about the hard copy version.
No, this is the kiosk. The study bill on the kiosks. I think this should be an easy one.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I apologize.
That's all right. Okay. Okay. Without objection, would you please move the bill?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 664, an act directing the Motor Vehicle Division of the Department of Justice to study a feasible of the driver's license renewal kiosk, establishing a reporting requirement, and directing the division to report to the Transportation Committee. Do concur.
Discussion? Senator Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be a no vote on this one because I did hear that this was not one of the top three priorities while bringing the CARS system on board. And I think that we do have a time frame here to get it right going forward. So I'm just going to be a no.
Thank you. Senator Friedel?
Madam Chair, I think it's a great idea that I could go get my red box and also get my driver's license all in one shopping center. thank you. Madam Chair, but I will be a no.
Madam Chair.
Well, Senator then, Dunwell.
Madam Chair, for equal time then, I'm going to be a yes. Administrator, she did say that, you know, they would do their priorities first, and they may show that there's a need for this this literal location, remote location, in addition to a virtual remote location. So they may find when they do all their cars priorities that this is still needed. So I'm a yes.
Thank you, Senator Dunwell. Senator Usher.
I think I'm going to wave off my question and just say the question.
Oh, Senator Vance had a question. Go for it. Okay, the question's been called. We better take a roll call vote.
Senator Friedel.
No.
Senator Olson.
Yes, and Senators Kelker and Gross vote yes by proxy.
Thank you. Senator Beard.
No.
Senator Dunwell.
Yes.
Senator Glimm.
No by proxy.
Senator we got Gross and Kelker. Senator Mandeville.
No.
Senator Tribus.
Yes.
Senator Usher.
Yes.
Senator Vance.
No.
Chair Manzella.
Yes.
Seven yes, five no.
All right. Who would like to carry this one? Tribus, okay. Senator Tribus will carry House Bill 664. Okay, I think that's...
What's that?
House Bill 664.
That was 664?
Oh. That was the kiosk bill.
You told me it was 592.
I know, I saw it.
All right, good work, committee. Is there anything else that we need to discuss for the good of the committee? Hearing none, we are adjourned.